15 to 20 million jobs. I am your future.
You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leader.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome to our broadcast here on 860 AM, serving Philadelphia and the tri-state area and the entire world by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and clicking on the Listen Anytime link. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're getting closer and closer to the end of the summer season. And in my travels in the last few weeks, I had the pleasure to speak with many of our listeners and supporters, and they tell me exactly what they're doing to support our efforts here on American Workers Radio. And I'm also pleased to include some of their suggestions during our conversations. As always, go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in, then sit back, relax, and enjoy, because we have a great hour of information to share with you and a special guest as well. Joining us today is our very distinguished panel, Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, the East Coast Vice President of SCORE, and Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration. I'm Michael Blihash, and your engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. Well, this year we had many guests come on the broadcast. We talked about the employment situation in America. We discussed ways to encourage people to support America's businesses. We encouraged people to consider opening small businesses and directing them to help those small businesses so that they will be able to move forward. And we also offered suggestions to people looking to go into business that they could contact places like SCORE, which is a national organization, and get ideas, get their feet wet before they make the big plunge in opening up a business operation. Our show is trying to do its very best, and I first want to say thank you to all those people that stopped me at the Polish American Festival there at Częstochowa this past Labor Day. We had a beautiful crowd all 3 days, and that festival continues on Saturday the 12th and Sunday the 13th, and I'll be up at the main stage the entire time from 11 a.m. until 8 p.m. I encourage you to stop by and make sure you let me know that you tune in to the program. Well, joining us today, first of all, before I go to our special guest, I'm going to ask Rich to introduce her. I want to remind all of you that October the 2nd is Election Day countdown. That begins the last day for you to register to vote for the new election, which will be in November. So if you are not registered, I encourage you to go on the front page of our internet site and also register to vote. Don't be afraid to vote. I'm so disappointed when people tell me I don't like to contact elected officials because they'll have my name, my address, my phone number. Ladies and gentlemen, you are the taxpayers. You represent the blood of the country, the heart and soul of the country. These are bread and butter issues that we're talking about. Don't ever be afraid to call the elected people who are being paid to do a job to represent you. With that, I'm going to open up the conversation by welcoming Rich Logis. Rich, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Jennifer, are you on with us?
I am. Hi, guys.
Okay. Good morning. Guys, I just want to do a really quick intro. And Jennifer, so I promised all of our listeners, just so everyone knows here, that our guest today, Jennifer Briney, who runs a podcast called The Congressional Dish, I'm going to let her tell us about what it is that she does. And Jennifer, I promised our panel and our listeners that if they're not generally pissed about the state of affairs at this point, you're gonna give them closure of being pissed about things after today. So no pressure. I discovered, guys, I just want to let you guys know and our listeners know, I discovered Jennifer, that's the beautiful thing about access to information. You can read an article and then see something, and then something else leads you down to something else, and I discovered Congressional Dish and Jennifer. And I went on her Twitter page just to see the stuff that she was posting, And one of the things, Jennifer, that I was actually quite impressed with was I noticed several comments of people saying, hey, Jennifer, I'm not really political, but I'm really interested in what it is that you're doing. So that tells me that you're developing a following for people who are starting to pay attention to these things. So, guys, welcome, please, from Congressional Dish, Jennifer Briney. Now, Jennifer, we're going to do two things here today. We're going to take two segments. First segment is I'd like for you to talk about what you do generally for Congressional Dish, your work, and also some of the things you're working on right now that relate to labeling and Made in America. And then in our second half, we're going to talk about some, I think, Jennifer, you called it some of the most corrupt bills that you've seen.
Yes, there's been some competition for that label, but yes, I've seen some. I've been doing Congressional Dish now for almost 3 years, and in those 3 years, I've just seen amazingly stunning acts of corruption that haven't been covered by the mainstream media. But just so your listeners know what Congressional Dish is, about 3 years ago, I saw a congressman slip something into an energy and water funding bill that would protect secret campaign contributions. And I didn't actually believe that that was possible, and so I went to the congressional record and confirmed that I saw what I actually thought I saw. And from that day forward, I just started kind of reading the congressional record and seeing, is there stuff that's getting into these bills that nobody knows about? And the answer was yes, and it happens all the time. And so for the last, Congressional Dish is turning three next month, so for the last 3 years, I've been reading all of the bills that passed the House of Representatives and telling people what's in them. And then for this Congress, which started in January, I'm going into the Senate also. So I'm covering everything that passes at least one branch of Congress. And so that's what the podcast is. And it's also my journey in learning how Congress functions. So if you listen to the first 2 years, you're going to hear my just shock and amazement about what goes on. So I'm becoming an expert on what happens in Congress, but you can also hear my journey of trying to understand how the system is supposed to function and then how it actually does function. Those two are, they're very different things.
Very good, Jennifer. Jennifer, I want you to know that you're on the broadcast today with Mark Andel and Larkin Connolly. And Mark, give Jennifer a welcome.
Hello, Jennifer. How are you?
Hi, Mark. I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good, good. I got to be honest. I went on your site. Rich was nice enough to forward the link, or Henry, and wow, you know, awesome. I listened to it first. Of course, the country of origin labels really got me listening on the meats and products, because that's what I do. I own the Made in America store. I started 2007. I still own manufacturing. Just so you know, kind of the story. I lost half my manufacturing business to China back in 07, 08, really woke me up. So I opened the Made in America store to stand for our country's soldier and American worker and people that work with their hands and support entrepreneurs and inventors. But we chose 100%, so we're the only 100% store, let alone in the country, in the world, and we never knew that from the beginning. So I run three letters of authenticity. I do a lot of what you were talking about. When I hear you mention that they may be taking labels off, the World Trade Association, I believe. Now you have proof I really listen. you know, but when I hear that's being done, and, you know, where generally meat would be just meat, and we don't know where it comes, we want a choice. And I think you referenced to if it was mad cow disease from, you know, Mexico, we want to know, and we want to have a choice. Mm-hmm. And I'm into that. I became the good housekeeping seal for Made in America products. We're up to 6,600 products and support 450 privately owned businesses. But if I didn't have the tags and labels and request my three letters, I wouldn't know where my products are made. And there's a lot of fraud, as we know. The Federal Trade Commission requires 50% to be made here. There's the Berry Act that we follow, you know, the military put. But there's so many ways around things. And I love that you're kind of reading, you know, the bills for us. And I think you said there was something like 500-plus bills released in May alone.
Oh, no. Those are page numbers.
Oh, page numbers.
Yeah, there was about a couple thousand page numbers in June, but we had, I think it was 45 bills that I had to read for May. So yeah, it's a lot of bills, but it's not obscene.
Yeah, I was actually impressed on how you your downloads. I think you said 10,000. I don't know if that was a day or how much you got the people's attention like I did, though, and you're raising awareness, and people don't have the time, and you're kind of making it easier for them. to learn and get an understanding. So it's great to have you on. I think you're a perfect fit to kind of educate people and make them aware like I do.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think a lot of people really do care about what's going on in the country, but they are turned off by classic politics where you have one person on this imaginary blue side and another person on the imaginary red side just screaming at each other. And that's not the type of information I'm seeking. I want to know what's actually being done with my tax dollars and in my name. And so that's what my show focuses on, is the actual details. And like you said, people don't have time for this. So I try and get it all down into about 1 hour. Here's every bill that passed this month. Take 1 hour, listen to it, and go along your merry way. But at least you'll know what's actually being done when you go to the ballot box and you get to pick whether or not this person is representing you correctly. You know, like, we need to know what their job performance is for the 2 years they're in office in order to elect either better people or keep people that we like. If you don't know what they did, then how can you judge them accurately?
Very well said, Jennifer, and we're going to ask Henry if he would link that to the front page of our internet site so that more of our listeners would be able to log on and know more about what you're doing and listen to your presentations as well. You're also with Larkin Connolly. Larkin, how are you doing?
Good morning, Michael.
Hi, Larkin.
Good morning, Henry and Mark and Rich, and good morning, Jennifer. What a dynamic approach that you're taking to congressional oversight. I love it.
Thank you.
I'm one of those people who will rely on your site because I don't have the time to read the minutia of stuff that comes out of Washington, D.C. So I appreciate what you do on Congressional Dish, and I'm dying to ask you a handful of questions once we get into the meat of the program.
That sounds great. I'm excited.
Very good. Rich, how would you like to continue our conversation with this great guest?
Thank you, Michael. Jennifer, let's get right into what is this World Trade Organization labeling project that you're on right now? Because this sounds like a little bit like we're getting deeper into the rabbit hole with this stuff.
Yeah, I actually just finished that project. So the episode is already out there. It's the most recent one about the World Trade Organization. And I didn't intend to look into the World Trade Organization until I saw a bill that passed in June. And what it would do is it would repeal our country of origin labels for beef, chicken, and pork products. So right now, you can go to the grocery store and look at the label and say, okay, this was raised in Canada, but it was slaughtered in the United States, or it'll say it's from the United States, and you know that this cattle was born, raised, and slaughtered in the United States. Well, those labels would theoretically go away depending on which bill would become law. And so my question was, why would they do this? Because I don't know of any letter-writing campaign trying to get the labels to go away. And the reason is because we have, over the course of the last, well, this really started in the late 1940s. So this has been going on for a long time, almost, I don't know, 75 years. We signed on to be a part of something called the World Trade Organization, which in my research, I realized is kind of a global, not kind of, it is a global government. And I know that sounds a little insane, but what we signed on for when the World Trade Organization was created was that with any other country that's a part of it, we would not do anything for our domestic companies that would not, how do I put this? It's called most favorable treatment. So you can't do anything for your domestic companies that would give them an advantage over foreign companies in the consumer market. And so what Canada and Mexico said, because this was also a part of NAFTA, they said that our labels give the domestic producers of beef, pork, and chicken an advantage over theirs, because when the label says made in America, well, all of the animals have to be raised in America. So if you have a Canadian cow that's brought into the United States to be slaughtered, well, it has to say that on the label, and there's more paperwork involved. So because there's more paperwork involved, they're saying that our labels are internationally illegal. Now, this is the first time that I know of that our Congress is on the doorstep of repealing one of our laws because of the World Trade Organization. But think about how many different labels that could apply to. You know, Mark, I believe you just said that you have to do all kinds of things to track where your products come from if you want them to be labeled made in the USA. So this is for pork, beef, and chicken right now. What's next? And it's all because we are not allowed, based on the World Trade Organization, which we get no vote in, we're not allowed to give our domestic companies any kind of advantage over foreign ones, which it seems like madness to me. That's just my opinion. But the World Trade Organization, I'm just now learning that that this thing, it has power over what we can and cannot call U.S. law. And that freaks me out. So that's what my whole last episode is about.
You know, Jennifer, how can we not have a vote in the World Trade Organization?
Well, the way that we do is we have representatives that are appointed by the president. So the U.S. trade representative right now is negotiating new trade agreements. So these are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So you have the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which would bring in 12 more countries, and then we have one that's being negotiated between all of the European countries and our own, and then one called TISA, which by my count had over 50 countries involved. So these are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the person that is representing us right now is a man named Michael Froman, and he's the U.S. Trade Representative. You did not get to pick him, but you did get to pick Barack Obama, who picked him. So that's kind of like the way that they say that we're represented. But in these tribunals, I don't understand how the judges are picked, but there's three of them. So when Canada sued us, there were these three guys. One was from Switzerland, one was from Portugal, one was from Pakistan. Two out of the three I got confirmed had some kind of like lobbying businesses that they not only worked for, they ran. So these are corporate lawyers that are deciding these cases. And we have no access to these courts. This is something that companies and countries use to sue each other, and then our laws get changed. So that's the part that's completely undemocratic. And I got this. That was my reaction to it, so I went and found other people's reactions, and it's insane to me because it's kind of across the board. It's Republicans and Democrats and progressives and libertarians. I mean, whatever you label them, regular people are finding this to be a problem with our sovereignty. And we really, aside from Michael Froman, I don't really know who can do anything to change the laws of this system. It's really quite a mess because I don't know of many people that even know what the World Trade Organization is, so we're definitely not fighting to get that to be a more democratic institution, because right now I'm just fighting to tell people that it exists.
Jennifer, you are doing an unbelievable job. You've educated a lot of our listeners and me as well. The main thing that I see is going to come about from your show is that people are going to finally get educated, and we will promote what you do because that's what we do. In fact, what we're trying to do to combat losing all of our jobs is we're asking people not to buy things unless it does have an American-made label. Really hold out. And then do what you can. Speak up. Don't be afraid. When people tell me, oh, I don't like to, you know, be vocal in stores and things like that, I tell them, you're the customer. You're the one putting the money up. You can speak up. You're the taxpayer. Speak to your politicians. What we've done in America for the last 30 plus years is we sat back. And we just sat there and did nothing. We hoped that people in Washington would lead us, but they didn't. And now we have to take the bull by the horns and do things on our own.
Absolutely. But do you see the problem on the World Trade Organization scale with the Made in America label?
Absolutely.
What you're telling people to do is to use those labels to give American companies an advantage. And that is expressly illegal in the world government. I think I'm going to call it the World Trade System because it's not just the World Trade Organization. There's also the International Monetary Fund that's a part of it and the World Bank. So those three are somehow one thing. So we'll just call it the World Trade System, I guess. But in that system, Buy American is what they're trying to stop us from doing. And if they have to take information away from us to give the shirts from wherever, Pakistan, India, China, Korea, whatever, to have them be on an even playing field, at a certain point, they're going to have to stop telling us that this is made in America, because otherwise we are going to shop that way. I try and buy American when I can. A lot of people do. And on the World Trade System, they're trying to make that go away. So for everything that you guys believe in, like, This is a threat to that. The World Trade Organization is definitely a threat to that.
Yes, you're confirming what I've been saying for the last 10 years. The national leaders have dumbed down America to the point where the people don't know anything. In fact, we were just discussing this a few weeks ago. You can go into any of the major supermarkets and look at some of the products and not know where it was made. It just says distributed by so-and-so, but there is no place to list it where it was made. And that really should be illegal. We should know what we consume and who in the Drug Administration or whatever has made their decision that it's a good product and things like that. This, just because a company is called international, should not give them an open door to just flood our markets.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. And I'm really glad that the message that I've heard already on your program is that you're telling people to communicate with their representatives, because in the hearings I was watching about our country of origin labels, the congressmen were openly discussing about the fact that no one's been contacting them about this issue. And so there was one congressman, the guy who wrote the bill, and he was out there saying, oh, well, nobody uses these labels, so we can repeal it. It's fine. And then we had another congresswoman who's like, well, they don't know that this is happening. There will be a backlash. And so that's the fight that they're having amongst each other. And it tells me that we're not calling. We're not telling them that we use the labels, because otherwise – why would that? Well, I don't know if that congressman actually thinks we don't use the labels, but he's claiming that that's what he says. So if people would just pick up the phone, especially after hearing this, and say, hey, by the way, I use the labels, or I don't, but I don't know many people who don't. But if you call your representative, just, you know, once or twice a week, just let them know what you're thinking about whatever. It actually makes a huge difference.
I'm going to
ask. I don't think people realize it.
I'm going to ask Rich if he could do something with all of us to maybe make some direct blog type thing where we could have responses from the actual telephone contacts or email contacts from the representatives. Because what you're saying is exactly the ploy they use in all levels of government. Oh, you're the first to mention it to me. No, I'm not. I know that three other people called you today because I sat there and watched them call you. So I'm not the only person who brought up the issue. But that's how they brush you off. We're having the World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia. They're unveiling all the products that are going to be sold during this celebration. And I regret to say that American companies hired all foreign distributors to bring in their products for the World Meeting of Families. So 98% of the products sold on the streets, including the books and programs, are printed outside of this country. We have enough workers in this country. We have more than enough printers. We have people that could make the bobbleheads, the medals and everything else, the shirts. It should be done. The problem is, the companies in America get pushed aside by the foreign merchandisers who just keep making it cheaper and cheaper and cheaper to buy those foreign goods. What do you say, Larkin?
You're 100% right. But the buck doesn't, you know, the buck really stops with local politicians. You know, all politics are local. To allow that to happen, to me, is as egregious as the Congress flying flags over our capital that were made in China. So, you know, I don't know.
And you're right, Larkin. You know, what I started the big battle last week over when I called the St. Jude shop, and I want to put them on the carpet because they're accepting all this stuff. The St. Jude shop and Aramark and everybody else is putting all this foreign-made stuff on the street. This should be sinful. They should consider it sinful. If they gave 50-50, I would not complain. The problem is this. We have so many migrants coming in, so many people coming into the country, and they say, oh, we have to help them. We have to get them jobs. How will we get them jobs if those jobs are being given across the ocean rather than making those products available here, especially for the Pope visiting, coming from the Pope? Any visitor that's coming from the world that's going to be in Philadelphia for that event is going to walk out with a bobblehead or a medal or whatever, and it's not made in the USA. It's made from some other country. We have to end this stuff.
Well, and I think another thing we also have to consider is that a lot of these products are being made by so-called American companies that are actually not American in any way. They're multinational. And so a lot of people confuse, like, oh, Nestle is everywhere. This must be American. It's like, no, this is a multinational corporation. They know no boundaries. They have no country loyalty. And so when you look at these products and they're made by these companies that we recognize the name and we just assume that these are American and supporting them is good, you have to remember that they're taking, you know, like Target. Everything that comes from Target is being made overseas. We love Target. We think it's an American company. So we also have to keep in mind that the companies themselves are not American, and therefore the products are not American, yet our government is acting on behalf of these companies, opening up the border so that they can take their labor overseas and make more money. You know, like, we have politicians that are working for these companies and not working for us workers, and that's where I think the big divide really is. It's not even the immigrants coming in. It's these people that are working for these giant companies that have no loyalty to us. And yet these are the people that we keep voting for over and over and over again against our own best interests.
You're absolutely right, Jennifer.
Michael, excuse me. Mark, your blood pressure up yet? Jennifer, I want to ask you, if I may, this is a broad question. So I realize it's probably not as easily answered as we all want it to be. But who is really benefiting from this? I mean, who are the as you're looking at this, and I'm sure there are many, but what are the industries, the lobbyists, donors, who's benefiting? You know, this is all being driven because of, I guess this is my opinion, correct me if I'm mistaken on this. I mean, of course, it's certainly driven by money. We have, over time, as you pointed out, going back even further than I think we realized, 7 decades, gradually we've been eroding slowly but surely our autonomy, our sovereignty. We've made ourselves more dependent upon other countries. Who's banking on this? I mean, who's profiting from this all?
You know, the answer is actually quite easy. It's multinational corporations. It's these giant companies. For example, in this World Trade System, there was a packaging law on cigarettes in Australia that the cigarette companies just did not like. It makes the Australians, if you go and buy cigarettes there, they're in plain packaging and they have pictures of cancer and just horrible things on them to discourage you from buying these products. And so the tobacco industry used another country that Australia had a trade agreement with to sue Australia in this system and basically won the case against the cigarette packaging law, and this is still ongoing. So, and then when you look at the one that we lost, the country of origin labels, well, that's the multinational corporations that don't want to have to keep track of where their animals come from. They have animals from all over the place, and they want to be able to put a Made in USA sticker on it as long as the cow is slaughtered here. That's what the laws used to be. They liked that because they don't have to do any extra work. So, and there's one example after another. You know, there was a bill that passed in June that allows any foreign company that trades in cotton, they can now trade in the cotton swaps, you know, the futures market. And right now that was just for domestic cotton producers. Well, now any cotton producer all over the world can participate in this market. And that's something that they said they were doing it for cotton producers, but they're certainly not doing it for domestic ones. And the guy that wrote that bill, his number two contributing industry is, our number two contributor is ICE Group, which is Intercontinental Exchange, which is where these companies go to do the swapping. And every time there is a swap, that ICE Group gets money. So this is another multinational corporation. And it seems like every single bill, someone is getting paid by a giant company that is not American to do this, I hate this word, but globalization thing. Because these companies, and I want to stick to labor because that is something that you guys are really into. If you think about tearing down borders and what all of these measures seem to be doing to take down trade barriers, you're allowing these companies to go and shop for the cheapest labor. And we were told in my last episode by one of the people who wrote the World Trade Organization into existence that the blue-collar worker is going to be a brontosaurus They said it right out there in the open in the Western world. There's no more room for someone who just goes to work and does their job and comes home. It has to be tech stuff. It has, these people have to be overly educated, because anything that can be done by a child in another part of the world, well, that's the cheapest labor. So that's honestly who I think this the system is being designed for, because it's certainly who is benefiting. And what disturbs me is that our representatives in the United States, not all of them, there are some very notable exceptions, but most of them are down with this whole world system thing and with what's been labeled free trade. And it's not free. It's definitely rigged. And unfortunately, I think it's rigged against the high wages that we used to pay U.S. workers. So, I mean, short story, I think multinational corporations, I think that's who benefits.
Jennifer, the original reason the World Trade Organization came about 50-some years ago was to help nations to build industries in their countries, and they would have a customer to bring their stuff over to the USA for sale and help that country come up the ladder of success. Well, over the last 30 years, we've taken that ladder of success, thrown off all the American people, and put everyone else in other countries on the ladder of success. And that's where we are today. And the people in high positions simply don't care about us, because they've gotten away with it for 30 years, where the American people just went out and purchased anything that was on the rack and didn't, you know, question it. Today, we have a little different situation, and that is mainly because we have so many people unemployed, so many people in need of financial help, that the government is overpowered with giving out money for all sorts of unemployment and disability and welfare and things like that. Yet no one is addressing why we have to give out all these programs. They're not talking about the employment situation, helping small businesses, none of that stuff. It's all, we need the money, bring the immigrants in, bring the migrants in, no problem, and we'll support them. Where do we support them from if our own people don't have jobs to pay into the tax system?
So Jennifer.
Well, that's the problem with the rhetoric that I hear in Congress all the time, because they say the word jobs and they say job creators all the time, but the bills that they're creating, they're for the business owners, you know, they're for the shareholders and the people on the top. They're not really for the workers. So they're not trying to create jobs. If you want to create jobs, how about we rebuild our crumbling infrastructure? And we do it with government money. We pay American workers to do it. I mean, we have ways to actually, because jobs, there's just, I have a job because I'm working on a project called Congressional Dish, you know, and you have a job because you're working on a project that's ongoing, luckily, which is your radio show. So it's like, you need to have a project in order to have jobs, and we're not funding any projects. We're funding wars, you know, but you're absolutely right. They use the rhetoric that we want to hear. They talk about jobs. They legislate something completely different. And I think that's a huge problem, because we just listen to what they tell us on the TV and we take them at their word. And yet I can look into the bill and be like, oh, wow, they just said that this bill does the exact opposite of what it actually does. And no one on the TV is making that connection. No one is saying, oh, wait, I read that bill and you're lying to us right now. Let's never see that conversation. They ask these congressmen things as if they're experts, and they don't actually challenge the words that come out of their mouth.
Oh, my God, Jennifer.
Jennifer, we have multinational corporations, and we have international organizations, not American-based, that can send unlimited amounts of money to our American lawmakers.
Mm-hmm.
We have corporations that wag their fingers, not all, but some that wag their fingers at Americans and say, pay your fair share, pay your fair share, while they defer millions upon millions upon millions of taxes that are sheltered overseas, and they wag the finger to us to tell us to pay our fair share, while they defer their millions upon millions upon billions of dollars in monies that are overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break. I mean,
now Jennifer,
come on.
Do you think the World Trade Association would let me join Mark Andel
Now, we're up to 6,600 products, and we support 450 privately owned businesses. Not one is publicly traded or a slave to the shareholder. By the way, I love what you're talking about, what you're digging into. You know, my goal is to put a Made in America store next to every Walmart across the country. You know, then we'll work on the other countries. But what you're saying, though, this club, the World Trade Association, I mean, the control they have, it's scary, the handful of people that are really running the game.
Yeah.
And it is, you're right, Jennifer.
It is tightly controlled, and we don't know who these people are. And that's a big problem, too, because while I was researching the three judges in the case that is making my food labels go away, something I actually use, finding information on them was not easy. In fact, one of them I kind of had to just give up. And so there is a small group of people controlling this global system. I can't tell you who they are. And that's extremely concerning.
You didn't really give up. I can tell the person you are. You're still looking.
Well, Jennifer, this is an outlet. We want you to know this is an outlet for you to make sure we find out who those people are, identify them, and then make sure that we get our fair share of whatever is happening. One of the things, Jennifer, I wanted to tell you that Larkin, Mark, and Rich, and Henry, and everybody is so involved in all of our listeners. We have a group of people who listen, who go and speak up at stores. What we're trying to do is keep more American dollars circulated in America. We're not trying to cut world contacts or anything like that. We just want to have 50% of what's in America's stores actually made in America. Can you imagine how different America would be if that was the case?
Yeah.
Rather than going into a store and you can't find an undershirt or anything that's made in America, how is that even possible?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people have bought into the idea that the free market and free trade, just because the word free is attached to it, are good things. And so we have a lot of people in this country that are supporting policies that they don't understand because they're labeled free, which is genius when it comes to marketing. But the policies that are actually being pushed under the names free trade and free market, I think we need to pay a lot more attention to in a way that's questioning, in a way that makes sure that the ideology, the theories behind it are actually what's being created. Because, you know, I'm all for freedom, but I'm not too excited about the idea of us just being consumers here in the United States. I think we can make things and we can be local, you know? Like, I don't understand why a tomato that's grown in Chile should be the same exact price as a tomato grown down the street, you know? And I don't understand why I shouldn't know what the difference is and support my neighbor as opposed to someone on the other side of the world. They're trying to create this one global community. But there's serious downsides to that is just not being questioned, especially in the mainstream press. And I think the reason is that the vast majority of our media, especially on the television, is owned by just six companies. And these six companies that control the messages that are getting out to the population, they're also involved in making products. You know, like GE and NBC are related, you know? So these are multinational corporations that are telling you what the news is and what the so-called truth is. And I've just taken it upon myself to question more. You know, I never questioned free trade or free market before I started doing this, but then I started seeing what the ramifications of those ideas were. You know, these things have consequences. And now that I kind of understand the system that's being put in place, it's not democratic. You know, the United States system, one of the things I think we're all very proud of to be Americans is that we have a vote in our leadership and in what happens in our country. In the World Trade System, you have no say, and you have no way to control who the person is who speaks for you. You have no way to know what's being said because all of these negotiations on these trade agreements are being done behind closed doors, and they don't even hide it. I mean, you go onto the websites for all of these trade agreements, and they say right there that documents are only available to participants, and the participants are government people and are multinational corporations. So,
but Jennifer, this is why, excuse me, you know, look, the thing people talk about it with secret this, I don't know about that stuff. What I tell people is no. The people screwing you are doing it very publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They're doing it very publicly. I don't know if there's a shadowy cabal that, you know, dances around a statue of a Greek. I don't know. The people doing it, they're screwing it publicly. I mean, they're doing it publicly. Found you. I found you because of one of the things that makes our country. I still have to believe, right? We still ultimately, we get pissed at this stuff, but we still have to believe that our country's great and we need to take it back. Mm-hmm. And the fact is our access to information is as great as anywhere in the world. Even with your point, which is right on point about media, you know, you've got a half dozen companies that control basically 95% of all the media we see, news, so-called, movies, music, all these things. TV, all of these things. But yet, we have this incredible access to the Internet, which 95% of our country has access to. So
we're getting there.
You're filling a market right now. I think, Jennifer, what you're doing is there are a lot of people out there who are going to find you, and you're looking for the people who basically are looking for you right now. And with that having been said, there are some other bills that I've heard you talk about that I want you to talk about with our listeners. Jennifer, I've heard you on your podcast talk about some other bills. Would you mind starting with the Stock Act bill for our listeners?
This was one of my favorites in a horrible way. yes, I would love to talk about that because this was my initial shock. This is the first thing that made me go, oh, my God, there are things going on in Congress that people need to know. So this was in April of 2013. I need to start a little bit earlier than that. In late 2011, 60 Minutes had run this special on how members of Congress are able to profit on the stock market based on knowledge that they get in their positions as, you know, congressmen, because companies come to them all the time and say, this is what we're thinking of doing. And so they'll hear about something and they'll bet on that stock. And, ooh, look at that. I'm in Congress and I just became a millionaire. So this happened all the time. 60 Minutes exposed it. And a lot of people were angry. And so with much fanfare, with, you know, cameras and a signing statement and just all of this stuff, they created the Stock Act, which was supposed to stop insider trading by members of Congress. And it was kind of a loophole-filled bill to begin with, but the thing that had the most teeth was this website that we were supposed to have that would have the financial statements of the president, vice president, members of Congress, and all of their staff. And so right before the day that all of that information was supposed to be turned in, so it would be on this publicly available website, the Congress and the president got together and gutted the Stock Act. And the way that they did it was amazing. The Senate did it first on a Thursday afternoon. After everyone was gone, like the room was completely empty, Senator Chris Coons got up and passed the bill by unanimous consent through an empty Senate. And unanimous consent means that if no one says, I object, the bill just passes. Well, there was no one in the room, so it passed. The next day, Eric Cantor in the House of Representatives did the same exact thing. It was well after everyone had already gone home and expected all business to be done for the day. He passed it through an empty House of Representatives. And then that Monday, President Obama signed it into law, but that was Monday, April 15th. It was tax day. That's why it was signed into law that day, because that's when the financial statements were supposed to be turned in. But 2 hours after he signed it into law, the Boston Marathon bombings made sure that the media never spoke about this. And I didn't even catch on to it for a week until I read that the bill had passed and, you know, looked into how it went down. But this was something that I don't think anybody to this day knows that it happened.
Jennifer, excuse me. Let me make sure I just heard you correctly. You just said that a bill passed with no one in the Capitol room?
So there were two people in the room when this happens, because you have a congressman who's sitting there with the gavel just kind of like operating the Senate or the House. And then there's one person who stands at the podium and says, I would like to bring to the floor S-716, that's what the bill was, and pass it by unanimous consent. And if there's no one else there to say, I object, the bill just passes. So technically there were two people in the room when this happened. And then, of course, the staffers and stuff that are sitting there, but people with power that could have actually stopped this bill from going through, there was nobody there.
And where were they? Do we know where they were?
Well, that Thursday, I don't know, because the Thursday one was weird in the Senate because it was in the middle of the day, So the Senate will disappear for hours and hours and hours, and then people get up there and talk about random things. But a lot of times, senators are speaking to empty rooms. And so in one of these giant breaks, Senator Chris Coons went and just quietly passed the bill. The House of Representatives, I know exactly what happened there, because there's a very predictable pattern on Fridays, which is that they pass all the bills in the morning, and then you'll have the head of the Republican Party and the head of the Democratic Party. They kind of like have a partisan bicker session for like half an hour, an hour. And this one was longer than usual. But once you hear the partisan bickering, you know that the day is done. There's almost never any bills that are passed after the bickering. And after that, that's when Eric Cantor presented the bill and passed it through. So it's like this pattern that is just established on a Friday afternoon. I'm sure all the members of the House of Representatives reasonably thought that the day was over and they went on vacation. Because mind you, this was before April vacation. So these people were leaving for like an entire week. So not only was it the day before a weekend, but it was the day before a week off. Everyone was getting out of town. And that's when this passed. And you know, there might have been a few people sitting in the back of the room because C-SPAN doesn't turn the cameras to show the entire well. But what I can tell you is that most people would have assumed that the day was over. And if anyone was in that room, then they didn't speak up and they were on board with this plan because no one said a word. They didn't even have to record a vote. And that's the thing. You can't go and check and be like, oh, how did my congressman vote for this? You can't because there wasn't a vote on this. So at the same time, like, as much as you can say that all of Congress is complicit in this, you can also kind of excuse everyone because the vast majority of them weren't there.
And this Stock Act, what the loophole was is that members of Congress could still, correct me if I'm wrong on this, could still continue to buy and sell stock, but they just now had to disclose it.
Pretty much, yeah. It was going to be a publicly searchable website so that irritating journalists like me could go online and see, you know, oh, this person passed this bill. Let's look into if they have stock in this company. And so right now, the reporting requirement stayed so that the president, vice president, and members of Congress still have to report their information. But they can report it on physical paper so that it's not online. I can't find it. If I really wanted to, I could go to actual Congress in D.C. and search through the physical paperwork. But if there's anything to hide, they can do it just by submitting it in paper form. And then the staffers, they don't have to turn in their financial information at all. So, you know, I'm a big fan of the West Wing. You know that most of the information that was going to the president went through Leo McGarry, and he is a staffer, you know, the chief of staff. These people are also allowed to trade on their insider knowledge, and now we have no way at all. There's nothing I can do to look into their information, and a lot of times it's the staffers that are getting this information first.
So a lot of the same people that wagged a finger about fair share buy and sell stock which is basically the equivalent of insider trading information, and then they use a lot of lawyerly language to say, no, it is available.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you got to get your ass on an airplane to go to Washington, D.C. to look it up.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. So now that website just doesn't exist.
Larkin,
they revealed the whole thing.
How are you enjoying our conversation with Jennifer?
I'm taking copious notes. I'm sitting here writing as fast as I can. Just as I'm in the middle of a note, you asked me a question. This is compelling. I'd love to ask Jennifer what she thinks about term limits. And is there a snowball's chance that a sitting Congress would consider passing legislation that would limit their tenure as king?
No. I mean, no. There's no chance of this Congress in particular enacting term limits because these people want to stay in Congress forever. I mean, the way I think about it is when you're running for office, especially if you've been there for 20, 30 years, there's a lifestyle that comes along with campaigning because all of that money that you're collecting from the campaign committees and the stuff that you get directly, all that money goes towards is food because you're throwing yourself luncheons with open bars and you're traveling around the country. I mean, I would love an unlimited travel budget to travel around the country and just speak to people. I mean, that's living the dream. And these people eat at steakhouses all the time on money that's not really their own. So the campaign lifestyle is a nice one, and I don't think any of them want to give it up. For me personally, though, when it comes to term limits, I look at someone like Bernie Sanders, who he's been in Congress for a very long time, and he has been fighting hard for at least, I mean, I've been paying attention to Bernie Sanders for over 10 years. So he is one of the few people where I'm like, God, if we had term limits, then Bernie Sanders still wouldn't be there, and we need someone like him. So I think that the solution is not limiting the amount of time that someone can stay in Congress. I think it's more our responsibility as voters to show up and vote them out, especially my generation. I'm 33. So I think technically I'm a millennial. I'm an old millennial. But we're not showing up to vote at all. And that's a huge problem. So when you see the problems that we've had for the last 30, 40 years, well, it's the same exact people showing up to vote for 30, 40 years. So that's why we feel like nothing's changing. It's because the voting population isn't changing. We're getting older. More of us are allowed to vote. We're just not doing it. And so things in Congress are not changing with the times because the voters aren't showing up.
But that's exactly like right. Limiting. And I mean, to think that you could change the direction of this country by mobilizing the voters is absolutely mm-hmm. ridiculous. Because if they didn't show up for the Obama election, especially in L.A., 64%, almost 40% of the people in this country didn't even vote in that election.
Mm-hmm.
So the chances of getting any kind of change in the direction of the way our judicial or our congressional branch works, I think is the only way that happens is if you pass some sort of an amendment.
I don't like to be told that we can't do anything
because I think once Americans get an idea in their head, they run with it. They don't always do it for very long. But if you look at, like, Occupy Wall Street, you had thousands of people all over the country that were sleeping in parks all at the same time. So you have this idea, and it can take fire. And so I don't like to be pessimistic and think, oh, well, voters can't actually change things because voters are the only people that can actually change things. I mean, you can go ahead and put in term limits. But then every 6 years, if you keep voting for the party and not for the person, you're going to get the same type of person over and over again. You're just going to have a little bit more of a turnover. But the problems that we have are still going to be there. You're still going to have gerrymandered districts. You're still going to have the Democratic and Republican Party who basically pick the candidates and for most offices. The House of Representatives is the one I focus on because that's the one I have the most hope in because it's harder to control. We have 435 people in the House. So if the idea got out there that we focus on the House of Representatives, because we can vote them out every 2 years. I don't think people realize that either, that the entire House of Representatives can be replaced every 2 years. All it's going to take is 1 year where everybody shows up thinking kind of the same thing, like, all right, we're going to do something about the House specifically. Because the presidential election has become a sideshow. It's just ridiculous. Those people are picked by the parties. We get one vote, and we all pretty much already know how we're voting a year and a half out, but that's all we're seeing on the television. It's a big distraction. If we started to focus on the House in a big way and more people were in on this conversation that we're having right now, I honestly believe that voters can change this and will change this. But right now, especially in my own generation, we're dealing with people that think that their votes don't count because they've been told this their entire lives. I've been told this my entire life. That my vote doesn't count. And it's a big lie, but it's a lie that needs to be combated. But once it is, no, I think voters can and will fix this. I'm quite positive about it.
Jennifer, we hope that you're desperately right about this. We do. We've got a few minutes left here. There's one other bill I wanted to ask you about. I'm pretty sure I saw this on your Twitter feed. It was regarding a bill about IRS targeting. Did I see this on your Twitter feed?
Oh, yeah. I've been obsessing over this for a long time. the whole IRS scandal to me just reeked of garbage because the thing that they were trying to protect, there's something called a 504 organization, and it's basically supposed to be for social welfare. So the idea is you can educate people about a certain topic. So in your cases, you can be educating people about, you know, labor standards and things like that. And so you'd be counted as a social welfare organization if you're educating people. Well, a word was changed in the definition of a 501c4 group that now allows some of that to be political. So as long as the group is doing 51% of their work not in politics, then it can be counted as a social welfare 501c4 group and not a political group. Political groups are already tax exempt. But what you're finding is that you have all of these new groups, especially since 2010. During the Tea Party wave, there were a lot of new 501c4 groups. And the reason that political groups want to be 501c4 is that they can keep their donor secret. And so what the IRS was doing is they were looking into political groups that were claiming to be 501c4, in my theory, and in the theory of many others, to keep their donor secret. So the IRS starts looking into that. Congress and all of these people on the television start pitching a huge fit because that would, if the IRS actually cracked down on that, that would crack down on their secret donors. And so they pitch this huge fit, and there's this giant scandal saying that they're politically targeting just the Tea Party. And yes, they were targeting the Tea Party because there was a lot of Tea Party groups that came out of nowhere. And the IRS is doing something I think actually makes a lot of sense. They were looking at the names, and if the names had political words like Tea Party or Patriot or Progressive or all these other political words, it wasn't just Tea Party groups. But if they had political words in their names, then they got looked at by the IRS. And this turned into the IRS scandal. And so what's happened at the IRS since that scandal is that the IRS isn't touching 501c4 groups, won't even look at them. So you have, like, Karl Rove's group and Barack Obama's group and all of these giant super PACs are now 501c4 social welfare organizations who are allowed to keep their donor secrets, and the IRS is doing nothing about it.
Jennifer, we want to thank you for coming on today, and we want to have you back very, very soon. I mean, in a week or two or whatever you can arrange with coming back. I know that you're in California and there's a time difference. Thank you for getting up and being so energetic to give us all this information. I want to just say,
my pleasure.
And I want you to let us know, tell us how we can get in contact with you. And we're going to have, by going to your internet site, www.congressionaldish.com. Ladies and gentlemen, do check this out. You heard Jennifer today. You'll be able to see what she's doing by going to her internet site. We will post it on our internet site. And I want to thank Rich Loges, Jennifer Briney, Mark Andel, and Larkin Connolly, Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blehash. Thank you for being with us today. Do spread the word. I look forward to seeing you at this weekend's festivals. Don't forget, spread the word about AmericanWorkersRadio.com and our great internet site. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for spreading the word. Until we get together again this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday, I wish you the very best. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Jennifer, thank you. Keep up the great work. You've got a new fan here.